Thursday, August 13th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Aurora Colony Vineyards 2015 Jazz Festival, August 9th, with doors opening at 2 p.m. and performances from 3 to 9 p.m. The Aurora Colony Vineyards is located at 21338 Oak Lane Northeast in Aurora, Oregon. Performers include Tony Lincoln, the Ron Steen Band, Picante Latin Jazz, Tom Grant, and many more. Again, that's the Aurora Colony Vineyards Jazz Festival, August 9th, from 2 to 9 p.m. More information about directions and ticket prices can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Ooh, what a little moonlight can do.
We were trying to get the injured people and take them to hospitals because there are no emergency vehicles over there other than police cars. They will not come in the area. Even the fire department, they're hesitant in coming over there. And so what we did was got an ambulance patrol to go pick up the injured people. But we couldn't do this because the law enforcement agencies there were shooting and we had to get out of the area. And there's a lot of our personnel that is missing. And so what we want to do now is set up a first aid station here. People are burning stores and people, little kids are falling down in the glass and the debris and stuff. And it's really horrible.
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Radio Archives, and welcome to From the Vault, our weekly series that takes the history out of the oldest and largest collections of public radio programming in the United States and puts it back on the radio. This week, we are going to be focusing on an upcoming event that the Pacifica Radio Archives is involved with at Grand Performances in Los Angeles, California, and we are a part of a concert commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Watts Uprising and Revolt in Los Angeles. And KPFK, Pacifica Radio, covered the events in 1965 and was the only independent, non-commercial, listener-sponsored media outlet in the United States before NPR and PBS. And today we're talking with Anthony Marshall, co-founder of Lyricist Lounge, a hip-hop showcase of rappers, MCs, and DJs, started in 1991. Welcome to From the Vault, Anthony.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So I'm going to pass this over to our co-producer, senior producer, Mark Torres, to ask you some questions about your music background in hip-hop, and then I'm going to come back and ask you about how we're going to be collaborating together with our concert on the 50th anniversary of Watts. So Mark Torres, why don't you rock and roll and give us some in-depth insight into hip-hop.
Well, I don't know. I think we're hoping to get that insight from Anthony. But one thing I wanted to say, Anthony, since we're talking about the two coasts here, on the West Coast, we had a phenomenon when artists like Ice-T and, you know, Ice Cube and Eazy-E, straight out of Compton, there was a whole element of gangster rap that had taken the nation by storm. And then in 1991, you start Lyricist Lounge, and it had a much different perspective using the same art form of hip-hop and rap, moving towards the socially conscious tip as opposed to, you know, what was super popular at the moment. Can you talk a little bit about how Lyricist Lounge formed and how that transition took place between a harder edge gangster rap and a socially conscious hip-hop?
Sure. I think, first of all, you know, thanks for allowing me on the show. Really looking forward to our collaboration on July 10th with Grand Performances. I think it's a great question, and I think you, you're presenting that question in a great way. You know, what it all boils down to, we are who we are based on who we're raised by and the environment we live in. And, you know, I was raised by a Rastafarian woman and have been, you know, a vegan since 8 years old to 30. And, you know, and so I was raised with just a lot of respect for my culture and, you know, we're from the Caribbean. And, you know, if any Caribbean folks out there, you know, you all know exactly kind of how those parents are. So they don't really take too much crap, you know. And so I was raised somewhat with an iron fist, and I was raised to really respect respect people. And so from that, you know, start point, you know, that's how I entered into the culture, you know, having a lot of respect for everyone in the community, really seeing it as a community, not just like this, you know, just this art form called rap, you know. And so just to back up a bit, you know, I started off as a dancer. I was a hip-hop dancer in a lot of different music videos back in the day. A cousin of mine was a dancer for special ed. And so I used to kind of follow them a lot and go to a lot of the nightclubs out, you know, that were popping up throughout the New York scene. I started going to nightclubs at 14 years old, which is really hard to believe in this day and time. But, you know, back in those days when you can just go to 42nd Street and get some fake ID, it was pretty easy to get into nightclubs. And, you know, it was a great environment there, you know. It was really just about folks really showing their skills. Like, I had no idea what the bar was until I was probably 19, really, you know, because it was, you get in the club and you run straight to the dance floor into that circle. And so, you know, a lot of my love for the culture started as a dancer and then kind of moved into, you know, the love of MCs and the art form of being an MC. And so myself and my partner, Danny Castro, we co-founded this in 91 with the help of a mentor named Charles Thompson. He was a friend of a school friend of a schoolmate of Danny. And pretty much he had a space. He had this rehearsal space. And he said, look, I'm not using the space. And I, you know, it seems like you guys could use it. Why don't you invite some young people down? I'll invite some music industry folks in and, you know, let's see what happens. And pretty much we just never looked back, you know. We stayed the course, and, you know, almost 25 years later, we're still consistently doing showcases and helping artists to, you know, get their dreams out there. So that's kind of how it started. But I really love that question and that angle of, like, you know, when you think about what was going on in the West Coast and, you know, the kind of just the gangster kind of community that was brewing, and you think of, you know, the environment, and not just like the hood environment, quote unquote, but like, you know, were people getting jobs back then? And not were they looking for jobs, but were they actually being hired for jobs back then, you know? And what was that climate about? Was Hollywood employing young black men at a time when there were so many movies being created? I mean, you know, when you think about Los Angeles and you think about Hollywood and you think about the millions and millions of millions of dollars that are made, and you think about the crews that have consistent work and they're able to take care of their families and buy homes and all of these things. When you look at these production companies and you look at the makeup, the ethnic makeup of these production companies, it's kind of easy to understand where the holes are.
Yo, my life is like Roots, it's a true story. It's too gory for them televised fables on cable. I'm a runaway slave watching the North Star. Shackles on my forearm, running with a gun in my palm. I'm an African, never was an African American. Blacker than black, I take it back to my origin. Same skin, hated by the Klansmen. Big nose and lips, big hips and butts dancing. What? I'm an African, I'm an African. And I know what's happening.
We're speaking with Anthony Marshall, co-founder of Lyricist Lounge, who will be producing, together with Grand Performances and the Pacifica Radio Archives, the Grand Performances Aftershock Series Watts 50 event on Friday, July 10th, 2015 at 7:30 p.m. Anthony, can you trace the trajectory of some of the artists you worked with, like Mos Def, A Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, Talib Kweli, and others that took a different path from the West Coast gangster rap?
These artists that you mentioned, that they're pretty much from a lineage of artists that were those type of artists, you know. They come from the lineage of the KRS-Ones and the Public Enemies, and, you know, I can go on and on. The folks that knew that having a microphone meant having responsibility and meant that here's your opportunity to actually say something. So if you trace Mos Def's history, you know, prior to really being a solo artist, you know, he was in the underground scene, which is the community we represent. We were a bunch of young kids that were dancers and high school kids that used to hang out at a park called West 4th Park, you know, similar to Leimert Park on the West Coast. Shout out to Freestyle Fellowship.
Right on.
that circle of West 4th Park was like a real, it was a cipher, which is kind of the term we all use when we were in these ciphers. And if you go on YouTube and look up, you know, some old footage of Mos Def, you'll see him right in that circle. And so that community really, again, come from that lineage of great artists. So I don't think it was so much of a paradigm shift as much as it was just kind of following suit. And so Mos Def being in this underground community, then connected with, you know, Q-Tip of A Tribe Called Quest and De La Soul, and then started kind of popping up on their albums. And, you know, again, it was really just something that was passed down. You know, we're really the sons and daughters of people like Rakim, you know, who had something to say. Big Daddy Kane had something to say, you know. And so we were just doing what we knew we were supposed to do, you know. And even on the radio at that time, it wasn't really a lot of gangster music coming out of the radio stations at that time. People like DJ Red Alert and Marley Marl, these DJs really curated a certain sound for us. And so as kids at such a young age, those are the things that we heard and those are the things we were inspired by. Then as we started getting older, maybe around 93, 94, you know, we started getting the influence from the West Coast of kind of gangster rap. And even in our own communities, we started, you know, I don't think some people may say, oh, gangster rap came to New York and then we started doing gangster rap. But, you know, there's always been kind of hardcore rappers in New York or in you know, in the East Coast that were always there. But I think it was just you didn't really take everything they said to heart. You listened to it from a poetic standpoint. You know, when you go back and listen to some songs from Kool G Rap, you know, the things he was saying and the way he put those things together, they were just, it was beautiful, you know, and he was really just telling, he was telling that story. Just like you would listen to a pimp talk who is, you know, living a negative lifestyle, but in the way he explains it, it's kind of poetic, you know. And so we deal with that, you know, in these communities we come from. We deal with the good and the bad. And, you know, as they say, when all you have are lemons, you make lemonade, you know.
Well, that's great storytelling. This is Brian again, and I want to sort of jump into the Watts 50th anniversary that we're going to be working you with. But before we do that, I heard so much about, you know, and I was waiting for you to say poetry. You know, here in the Pacifica Radio Archives, Pacifica Radio in 1949 started on poetry. It was the idea of poets and artists working together with journalists to tell our story. And what comes through the poetry and what we've learned is that poetry can come from pain and rage equally as it can come from love. And what we have through this history of the musical genre of hip hop is that poetic expression of rage and oppression. And I think, you know, Mark Torres and I, we found this really great quote from a recording of Dr. Martin Luther King talking about rioting and revolt, and talks in about that kind of behavior and those actions have to come through because of the oppression of those people.
America has been backlashing on the whole question of basic constitutional and God-given rights for Negroes and other disadvantaged groups for more than 300 years. So these conditions, the persistence of widespread poverty, of slums, and of tragic conditions in schools and other areas of life, all of these things have brought about a great deal of despair and a great deal of desperation, a great deal of disappointment and even bitterness in the Negro communities. And today, all of our cities confront huge problems. All of our cities are potentially powder kegs as a result of the continued existence of these conditions. Many in moments of anger, many in moments of deep bitterness, engage in riots. Let me say, as I've always said, and I will always continue to say, that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. I'm still convinced that nonviolence is the most potent weapon available to oppress people in their struggle for freedom and justice. I feel that violence will only create more social problems than they will solve. That in a real sense it is impractical for the Negro to even think of mounting a violent revolution in the United States. So I will continue to condemn riots and continue to say to my brothers and sisters that this is not the way. I continue to affirm that there is another way. But at the same time, it is as necessary for me to be as vigorous in condemning the conditions which cause persons to feel that they must engage in riotous activities as it is for me to condemn riots. I think America must see that riots do not develop out of thin air. Certain conditions continue to exist in our society, which must be condemned as vigorously as we condemn riots.
Yeah, we're talking with Anthony Marshall of Lyricist Lounge, talking about a performance July 10th, grand performances at the California Plaza, downtown L.A. So the pain and rage through hip-hop comes from the pain of an oppressed people, and it's a beautiful, poetic way to express that rather than through the violence itself.
Oh, my God. I mean, America should be very thankful of hip-hop culture, because if hip-hop culture did not exist, imagine where that anger would go, or imagine how that anger would be expressed, you know? And so as much, you know, negativity that hip-hop has experienced, even now, right, we're at a point where, whether it's ratchet music or whatever you want to call it, young people are expressing themselves through music, through poetry, and then they're going into the nightclubs and they're letting out all the frustration that they've felt throughout the day. And then the next day they wake up and they try to live. You know, and that's what people do. And so, you know, it's really, I'm really happy to hear that. And it's amazing, man. It's really amazing that people who are so oppressed and under so much pressure and under so much pain have found a creative way to express themselves and to let it out. And so God bless hip hop, man, because without it, this country would really be up in arms.
Agreed. So let's actually talk about what we're going to be doing together and the place we are in today, you know, with the news from South Carolina, Ferguson, and all over the country with Black Lives Matter and the violence that is erupting in the cities. We are going to be working together July 10th. This is Grand Performances downtown Los Angeles. Watts 50, the New York-based Lyricist Lounge, curates their West Coast evening of socially conscious rap and hip-hop. Pacifica Radio's on-the-ground coverage of the 1965 events will serve as source material for select musical compositions. We'd like to shout out to Leanne Hahn at Grand Performances for helping us organize this. Over a year ago, it was our first idea. This event is part of the Los Angeles Aftershock series, focusing on the cultural aftershocks of the pivotal events in 1965 and 1992, and it exemplifies how music, dialogue, and community celebration help us address racism in our city and nation. And this project is supported by the National Endowment for the Arts. And we're really excited here at the Pacifica Radio Archives to be part of that, because we're always looking for a way to represent and rebroadcast and reintroduce these amazing materials to new audiences. And that's what we're going to be doing, is going to a completely new audience of hip-hop fans to talk about and show what happened in radio over 50 years. So, Anthony, tell me how you're going to approach the performance or the song or the musical. Simple question is, what are we going to do?
Right, exactly. What's going down? You know, this is an extremely special day and a special event where it's a little bit more than just a showcase. You know, this is not just a situation where we're inviting people to come, throw their hands in the air and wave them like they just don't care, so to speak. This is really us showing honor and respect for those that experienced this incredible day, the Watts Uprising 50 years ago. And so what you can expect is really a medley of different artists. You know, we have a young man named Bamboo, who's a Filipino rapper from Los Angeles, and I know there's a huge Filipino community there. And so he talks in a lot of his music about the struggle of his people and what they go through that is very similar to ours. We have a young lady named Il Camille, where her family's, you know, she has background in Watts and in Inglewood. And then we also have a young lady by the name of Jametta Rose, who's an incredible singer and, you know, just, I think, going to be a really good person to kind of bridge things musically. And then, you know, we have a special situation here where I was able to, with the help of a young man named Food for Thought, who's an incredible spoken word artist from Watts. He calls himself a Watts historian. He basically got us in touch with the remaining members of the Watts Prophets. And so we're going to be blessed by some words and possibly some spoken word pieces by the Watts Prophets. And so I'm really happy about that.
Trick.
He's got big iron birds soaring through your skull.
Yeah.
And your mountain tall, they're not so high.
They ain't plateau. So high.
Your babbling brooks don't lost their bubbles.
Bubbles.
You better hear his word because you're in trouble.
Trouble.
As we all know, you know, the evening is going to be closing out with hip-hop's favorite revolutionary rap MCs, you know, Dead Prez, who, you know, when you look at them on YouTube and you look at their videos and you look at everything you may see, I think there are some that may see it and say, wow, these guys are very revolutionary. Like, whoa, I'm a bit scared of this. Oh, you know, are they, you know, they may have a lot of questions. But, you know, I can tell you, having known these brothers for, you know, over 20 years now, that, you know, they're really good people that really have the people at heart. And so, you know, I just really feel proud to kind of have them be a part of this. And I think they're going to round it out really well.
Yo, it's a beautiful day and everybody's feeling wonderful. The ladies is out looking fly, dressed comfortable. I love to wake up and feel the breeze through my window. Slip on a fatigue, grab a Dutch and roll some endo. It be days like these that make life so much easier. Anesthesia, so many pretty things to preach on. The greenery, beautiful birds, natural scenery, or even just the infinite sky. We be forever puffing loud and block or telling jokes in the ride. When the weather be hot, everybody be outside having fun.
Aight.
Eating fresh fruits and vegetables and good food put me in the mood for a festival. I put the great Mother Nature on a pedestal. She always fly, but today she's exceptional. If I had a chance to make a wish, every day would be just like this.
You know, not everybody in this world is going to be passive when it comes to what's happening to black people, you know, or Africans in the world. Some are going to speak back, and they're going to do it in a very articulate, but very passionate way. And again, as we said earlier, God bless hip-hop that we're expressing it through music, you know. But as they would say, you know, this is bigger than hip-hop, and it's really about using hip-hop as a platform to express this this bigger kind of conversation that we're all having. So I'm really looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, we're talking with Anthony Marshall of Lyricist Lounge, talking about a performance July 10th, grand performances at the California Plaza, downtown L.A. And I was there June 20th, Anthony, just a few days ago for the concert for the anniversary of the Watts Stax concert.
Yeah, I heard
amazing
about
that. And really beautiful. But right. What I noticed, and I want to sort of give you a heads up on, is there is a lot of people that were there at Watts 50 years ago, who will be in the audience. They were there in, the people that were there, the Watts Stax concert, in 1972, they were there. They remember, they brought their families. So expect the town and the community to come in force to remember themselves and to give that positive response to it, to their children and grandchildren. Yeah. It's really going to be a phenomenal event. But what I'm really curious Anthony, is how are you going to use the archives material? What we have for the audience in this show from the vault, we'll be playing clips of the actuality of what we're offering you as an artist to play with. But this is not a reporter behind a camera or a microphone watching the event saying what's going down. This is Pacifica Radio understanding the voice of the voiceless and putting the microphone in front of those participants and the victims and the people who were rising up against the oppression. So what we have are those rare instances where I'm thinking that somebody in the audience will hear themselves or hear somebody that they knew and didn't even know it. So that there's a little of excitement for me. But again, how do you plan to use the archival material in this event?
We've been spending some time going through the archive, and it's just really incredible, man. You guys have a great capture of the day. I'm very proud to have access to it and to start working on it. I wish I even had more time. But what we're planning to do is to create an incredible mixtape that uses snippets from the audio that you guys have provided, you know, to create this experience. You know, it's probably going to be about between 20 to 30 minutes long. So more of a snippet mixtape, but still, you know, something that merges, you know, the audio you guys have given us with incredible instrumentals from different folks that I know, such as Lego, who's a Los Angeles-based producer, and several other MCs, similar to folks I've mentioned before, Bamboo, Ill, Camille, Depress, and others. And so, you know, I'm really looking forward to this kind of this merge of all of these sounds that are really giving ground to this incredible audio that you guys received. And, you know, what's special to me is really the story of, like, how you guys got it. You know, like, the streets are being closed, things are being locked down, and, you know, this guy on a motorcycle is kind of riding through the streets, you know, and getting through roadblocks to try to get, you know, this audio captured. I just think it's, you know, we're really honored to have access to it, and really looking forward to finishing it. So, you know, definitely everyone listening, make sure you look out for the Lyricist Lounge Watch 50 mixtape presented by Grand Performances and Pacific Archives. Really looking forward to it.
Great. Well, we've been talking with Anthony Marshall of Lyricist Lounge. Anthony, did I tell you that I sing? Did I give you my audition tape? I didn't give you my audition tape yet? Holy moly.
We don't need audition tape.
And he's a dancer.
Right. And my background is a dancer. Why am I not hired by Lyricist Lounge? Well, we're looking forward to meeting you and to working with you and to hearing what you're going to be giving back to us. And we're so proud at the archives and at KPFK and Pacifica that we have new artists and poets that are working with the broadcast legacy that was put together over 50 years ago. And it's a great way to, again, reintroduce the idea of listener-sponsored non-commercial radio and independent media and independent arts. So thanks again for joining us on From the Vault, Anthony Marshall, and look forward to meeting
you. No problem.
All right.
No problem. Let this be the first of many. We look forward to working with you guys again.
Great. Thanks. Bye.
All right.
That was Anthony Marshall, co-founder of Lyricist Lounge, who will be producing together with Grand Performances and the Pacifica Radio Archives the Grand Performances Aftershock Watts 50 event in Los Angeles, Friday, July 10th, 2015, starting at 7:30 p.m. For more information on that event, go to pacificaradioarchives.org.
I don't understand.
Let me explain this clearly and plain about the journey of the brothers who missed this train towards sellout. When high profile rhymes go straight out the window, we're not like regular bimbos with sunshine men. Just a definition of those in this hot spot who despise the system. One composed of an inferior peer group, polluting the airwaves, and I got the scoop on radio. It's all about your cash flow. Pay for airplay or you fly solo. Only one.
And now we present some of Pacifica Radio's live coverage of the Watts Rebellion, August 11th through the 17th, 1965. You will hear actuality from events in the streets, community leaders, educators, residents, aid workers, police, radio commentaries, and KPFK listener call-ins. These clips were assembled into a program by Trevor Thomas called The Fire This Time in 1965 for KPFK and is one of the several programs on the rebellion preserved in the Pacifica Radio Archives. For a copy of this or any other program in the archives, go to fromthevaultradio.org or call us in the archives at 1-800-735-0230. Here is Pacifica Radio's The Fire This Time, 1965.
The Fire This Time.
The troops are massed in the gasoline loading area of a Richfield station. They are about ready to deploy and sweep this area.
5 days in August, Los Angeles, summer 1965.
And sweep south to Slauson as the southern boundary.
Approximately 7 o'clock in the evening, we were given a mission to report to the Watts area and secure the area and relieve police for duty. We are equipped in this battalion with the M1 rifle, and certain staff officers are equipped with pistols. We did not at any time use our automatic weapons, such as machine guns and automatic rifles. We strictly adhere to the use of the M1 and the pistol.
Troops are massed in the gasoline loading area of a Richfield station. They are about ready to deploy and sweep this area in an area which will begin here at Santa Barbara and sweep south to Slauson as the southern boundary. On the east, the area they will sweep is bounded by...
Riot at a glance. L.A. Times, Monday morning. August 16th, dead 31, treated in hospital 784, fire damage 100 million to 175 million, on duty 15,000 guardsmen and 1,000 police, cost of policing $250,000 a day, arrested 2,490.
We were in Watts a few hours ago and found generally an air of bewilderment pervading the primary battlefield. Many of the individuals we spoke to were not sure why the rioting had begun. They were growing fearful and cautious, though still defiant, as though a great swell of hatred had convulsed the community and was now beginning to subside. The scenes of riot have been repeated ad nauseum. Shards of glass sparkle in the streets, merchandise from gutted shop windows is trailed about in twisted heaps, the smoke of many fires still hangs in the air, a shot sounds now and then from a nearby rooftop. What really stands out is the fear, confusion, and aimlessness of the entire mess. Something quite terrible and full of foreboding has been happening in Los Angeles, but the record...
What happened in Watts in the 5 days of August 1965? As long ago as 1961, and as recently as a few days before the insurrection, a handful of people said things were so oppressive, people so shattered, that the worst could happen. But the consensus, official and citizen alike, was not so, not in Los Angeles. What happened in Watts?
It was at that time, 7:45 p.m. Wednesday, when California Highway Patrolman Lee Minicus tried to arrest a 21-year-old Negro, Marquette Fry, on drunken driving charges. A crowd began to gather then and grew to 200 persons, nearly all yelling threats and some throwing rocks. At 8:20 p.m., Minicus and his backup officer, his partner Bob Lewis, called for assistance. Minicus tried to put Fry into the patrol car, and Fry's mother, Mrs. Rena Fry, jumped on his back. Additional officers arrived, held off the crowd at gunpoint, and the Frys were driven away in a patrol car. The crowd moved on down the street. At 10:15 p.m., several hundred Negroes poured into an intersection, began stoning passenger cars and breaking store windows. At 11 p.m., police sealed off an eight-block area around 116th Street and Avalon Boulevard near where the Frys were arrested.
I am grieved that the splendid spirit and high moral integrity of the Negro people in our beloved city of Los Angeles is being besmirched by the happenings of recent days.
We wonder how the normal, deprived person reacts when you're hungry, you're overcrowded, you have no hope. Some people commit suicide. Others must learn how to handle it and must not show it in any way. They must be patient. They must wait. How much can you be deprived?
Let's face it. The United States and Los Angeles is a white world. It's a white legal world. It's a white financial world. It's a white police world. It's a white business world. It's a white world. And it's a world which has no respect for a Negro man. It's a world which is constantly disrespecting him. It's a world which is constantly expressing gross disdain for him. However an individual may fight this, he still lives with this. He lives with this night and day. At some point or another, and must force from this white world a recognition, an acknowledgement. Yes, we see you are there, you do live. And in a sense, these riots, the revolt is...
We recognize that all teenagers have a need to blow off steam, to stretch, to challenge. Newport Beach, they do. But yet, it's different when the Negro expresses it, all of the hostility. I'm not condoning it, but I am just thinking of the expectations for the Negro. The news media.
Authorities in Los Angeles have declared a state of insurrection earlier today, under which guardsmen were mobilized, but control remained officially in civilian hands. Disorder spread throughout the Negro Belt south of downtown Los Angeles, which stretches 15 miles west almost to the sea. Most of the city's 334,900 Negroes live in the area. The city's total population is 2.4 million. Rioting last night reached the edge of the University of Southern California campus near Exposition Park. Rioting was reported last night and earlier today in suburban sections where there are many Negro residents. About 100 Negroes jeered, hurled rocks, and fired weapons at police in Venice on the coast near Santa Monica.
Two freeways bypass Watts. The freeways that do go through a Negro area are elevated enough that any citizen who even comes in that direction can conveniently not see Negro life or anything approaching it. In every other example of community life in Los Angeles, it is perfectly easy to ignore, what is it, close to 500,000 Negroes, except on the rare instances when they are domestics, civil servants, or venture into the downtown area to shop.
And if you ever go downtown on 7th and Broadway, as I have done, and if you have come from the east side, or if you have come from Watts, which is Imperial, and you've come down from 116th Street or 110th Street, and you go right through, and you get into the 80s, you get into the Florence District, nothing but Negroes, you get into the Slauson District, nothing but Negroes, and into the 40s, and there's nothing but Negroes, and into the 30s, and into the 20s, and 18th Street, Pico, and you get downtown, and you look, and you see all of a sudden, you're downtown, and you see hundreds of white people, and you wonder, where did all these people come from? And the reason they have riots in the streets of Los Angeles, and the reason that the Negro doesn't understand a white person, because there are no white people in the city for him to talk to and to understand. Now, I went to a school, Jefferson High School. There was one white boy in my school in 3 years.
You know, as a Negro, you're told that you won't live very long. Your ill health, you know, life insurance people charge us more and say that our lives aren't as valuable.
You will find 30% of the people in Watts are unemployed, 60% receiving aid from the county, and the rest are working in medium jobs, just jobs that barely pay their existence. And it's just frustration out there. They feel that everything has been taken from them, the white merchants in the area are exploiting them, and that they have no way out. The way the Negroes, where the Negroes come from is very interesting also. They come from the southwest part of the United States out this way to California. And they go from the what we call the Cotton Belt region, Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia. They go north and middle west. And sometimes they leave from there and come out this way. And you will find that these people are very militant. They're very...
There's been numerous statements made by the mayor, the police chief, and other people prior to the riots, that Los Angeles had really no race problems per se, that the racial situation here was just great and dandy. Nobody, when I hear it, it makes me think of the Southern governors, Governor Wallace, saying that our Negroes are satisfied, our Negroes are happy here.
All that riot and stuff going on, I'm glad they're having it. I hope they don't stop. I hope it keep going around the nation and clean out all of them. Burn, Watts. They're sorry. Keep burning, Watts. Don't stop now. I'm with you all the way.
I'm sorry because you didn't listen. You've been told over and over again in many different ways this was about to happen. As Negro people in the community, we were working very hard to prevent this. We said over and over again.
I was at the scene of mass rioting today out in the Watts area and also in the South Central District. The Negroes there are armed with all types of weapons. weapons which they're looting from the stores. Right down there in the riot area, it's completely terrible. I mean, there's completely mass disorder, and I don't think there's anything that can't cope with the situation. There are people walking around with guns, firing at officers, burning stores and what have you. I mean, it's really frightening. And it's spreading, it's very consistent, and I mean, it's something very awful. I mean, you can't find a correct adjective to describe the types of situations that are going on out there. I mean, it's really horrifying, and it's very frightening.
The liquor stores, they left the wine on the shelf. They got everything else. And the pawn shop, they just stripped them. If they know that a business down there is owned by a white person, they've been attacking it. And this is primarily what it's been. The liquor stores, the pawn shops, and the clothing stores, and the furniture stores. They just went on in and wiped the stores out.
Those who do not return the stolen property should remember that so long as they keep it, they must know in their hearts that they have made thieves of themselves. They may escape justice, but they cannot escape the haunting knowledge of their misdeeds. And Yorty concludes, law and order will be reestablished in this city, and order will be maintained by as much force as is necessary. No problems existing here or allegations of police brutality can excuse the attacks of criminal elements upon the people of the city.
The word is freedom. Everybody is saying it. Not the civil rights people, the people. I mean, these are people that we've never been able to reach. I know these old men and women bringing their kids up there to get these clothes and food. Now, these people, I can see it in their eyes. These are people that haven't had the advantages to have these things before. You know, it's a few people, you know, making a profit out of it. You know, people getting cars. You know, going to these different areas and they load up the cars. They unload, you know, they're gonna sell the stuff. But it's some people, you know, coming out of the community. These people are walking on their feet, you know, taking arms and arms of food. Now, you know, they come in as mother and father, and they bring their kids. Also, these people, everybody you meet on the street, it's a different atmosphere. You know, the whole atmosphere has changed. You know, everybody's brother. You know, and it's like, you know, freedom now. To these people, it's freedom now. You know, and everybody's just, you know, is contented and happy.
From what I can gather, the stores around here that had pretty good public relations with the people in the community were not harmed. All the businesses that were terribly damaged around here were white-owned businesses. But there were many white-owned, and one Chinese-owned store here, which were not touched at all. People who were looting the store, many of them talked about poor service or returning one place down there, the liquor store, for instance. The woman said that she had gotten sour milk there, and when she took it back, the man cussed her and said that that she didn't buy it there. All sorts of grudges that they had against these merchants.
They were out chiefly to get theirs in as have-nots, in an affluent society, spurred on by promises of the great society, the affluent society, the richest nation on earth, and the rest of the double talk that we hear on television and every time a flag is unfurled and a politician gets up to speak on a rostrum.
You know, our streets are filthy because the merchants refuse to pay a teenager $5 to clean up. $5 in our community is a lot of money. Our teenagers don't have jobs. Don't all teenagers need jobs? Why should our youngsters be superior and be able to be hungry without clothes, without television, without car fare, not be able to go to the movies and not want it? How superior can you be?
But when you are a merchant, for example, and you have overcharged your customers can't go downtown, for example, because maybe their credit ratings aren't too good. And so you have a captive customer who has to come to you. And you have a store, and you charge him 50% more for a pair of pants than he'd have to pay someplace else. You know, and you go down to a market on one of these streets, and they sell this meat that's substandard. You know, and it's high. You have to pay the same price as you have to pay if you had a car and could go to some store on the other side of town.
We were trying to get the injured people and take them to hospitals because there are no emergency vehicles over there other than police cars. They will not come in the area. Even the fire department, they're hesitant in coming over there. And so what we did was got an ambulance patrol to go pick up the injured people, but we couldn't do this because the law enforcement agencies there were shooting and we had to get out of the area, and there's a lot of our personnel that is missing. And so what we want to do now is set up a first aid station here. People are burning stores, and people, little kids are falling down in the glass and the debris and stuff, and it's really horrible.
From Seal Abelera.
And you are at CORE headquarters, yes, in Los Angeles.
Yes, I'm the chairman of the housing committee. Yes, we had a call from somebody, we don't know whether they was Negro or what, but they said the leaders had a meeting, and they decided, the leaders from this area decided that this was a front for whiteys, and so they would have to burn the place down. And that also we was with the whiteys in Watts helping the cops, the fuzz, that's what they call it, the fuzz. And all of the women are gone. I'm leaving now with files and typewriters as much as I can carry in my car. And some of the men will stay around outside to see what they can do. We tried desperately to reach the police, but they are not answering.
If anything happened to my car, my tire went flat, we'd be dead. We stopped to photograph a burning furniture. I guess it was not a warehouse, furniture called Friendly Furniture, completely engulfed in flames. There were about three fire trucks there, and four policemen with shotguns, and a crowd of, I'd say, 500 residents of the neighborhood, all Negro. And while we were there, they touched off a new Buick Riviera.
All of our facilities are closed. Daycare centers, the working mother can't go to work today. Who suffers? The young child. But were we given a chance to say, can you work it out? Can you keep them open? Can you rally your community? Were we asked? I'm beginning to wonder what would happen if we were really under siege.
You see, our lights were off. The lights went off last night in Watts at about 10 o'clock, and they remained off. That means all of our refrigerators was off until about 2 o'clock today. We had two young children die last night around the corner from me at the market. They were in there looting, and when the firebomb was thrown in, they didn't know they were in there, I guess. They were trapped, and they tell me that you could hear the children screaming, and they couldn't get them out. Well, now, we don't want this type of thing. We deplore that just like we do police. We don't want the police hurt. We're law-abiding. We know that we must have law and order.
In every Southern California community with big Negro populations, tension mounted, crowds gathered, and police added extra crews. The terror in the streets caused a rush among white citizens to arm themselves. Homeowners with guns waded through the night in countless homes. Among the acts of violence, at least those reported, a 47-year-old Negro woman's legs were almost cut off yesterday by a burst of 20 rounds from a National Guard machine gun at a Watts roadblock. The guardsman said she refused to halt. Police said her car held a dozen Molotov cocktails.
If you look at the TV and the radio coverage, if you look at the newspaper coverage of this event, the entire press coverage, with almost no exception, is white. Here we're talking on TV, where we look at face after face after face covering this Negro revolt, and there isn't a Negro face discussing it. We get this all filtered through white minds, white thinking, white experience, white relationships, and let's face the most important fact, white fears. White fears of the Negro, of what the Negro will do, of where the Negro will move. And, of course, always in the back of everybody's mind, would you like one to marry your daughter? And let's not forget this. This is the big, ridiculous bugaboo, the fetish.
Now, look, a white man in Mississippi will go with a color woman. But you let a color man, look how they did for Emmett Till. He whistled at a low-class white woman, they say. And how they found him. They found him, he was dating.
That's right.
And he wasn't 15 years old. If a white man can go with a color woman, why can't a color man go with a white woman? She ain't no better than us. That's right.
Yeah.
We are born equal. At least many of us believe that we are born equal. But yet, the Negro is expected to behave in a superior manner. Remember, the churches were bombed. The news media brought it to our teenagers. Young children were killed in a church at Sunday school. The snipers killed Medgar Evers. Now, when snipers are shooting, you know, it's wrong. But yet, the Negro is supposed to behave in a superior manner and supposed to see the difference. Hoses and dogs were turned on the people in Alabama. But yet, we are supposed to live with this and have no feelings about it and at no time show any resentment.
Troops in battle formation, supported by police with riot guns, began a sweep to drive arsonists and looters from predominantly Negro sections, where 18 men were killed in 24 hours worth of violence. Acting Governor Glenn Anderson has declared Los Angeles a disaster area. County Sheriff Peter Pitches has called for additional law officers from five adjacent counties and neighboring cities. 10,000 National Guardsmen, all available in the state, have already been committed. Reserves were thrown into the battle against renewed rioting today. Police warned white citizens they would not be safe driving south of Pico Boulevard, the southern fringe of the Los Angeles downtown section. The mercury in Los Angeles hit 94 degrees today. Temperatures have been over 90 in Los Angeles since last Sunday. Police Chief William Parker said earlier today that the situation was still out of control, no control was near, and that the only way we're going to stop this thing is to arrest, arrest, arrest.
I'm at Wilmington Avenue and 103rd Street. West of me is a practically solid wall of flame as 103rd Street, the downtown portion, or the Watts Shopping Center, goes up in flames. Fires which started earlier this afternoon. At this intersection of Wilmington and 103rd are approximately 20 officers. They have the intersection completely under control. No traffic or persons are allowed to cross, except, in my case, press personnel. From time to time, from Grape Street, one block east of me, a row of officers will come down the street, sometimes holding in front of them personnel, civilians whom they want out of the area. The officers continually proceed down the street, about four or five abreast, telling them to disperse and go home.
Only 2% at most of the community was involved in unlawful activities. Yet the word Negro and criminal have been coupled together to slander 100% of the community, to slander the people who stayed at home, the people who were in church, the people who were worried about their children, to slander the people who every day, day after day, do their jobs as good citizens and are just as careful of their behavior as is the same 98% of the white or the general community, whether it's white, gray, blue, or green. I think we have to stop calling criminals Negro and call them whatever.
So that no matter how you look at it, they're going to lose. I, as a Negro, will be part of the statistics. You know, the Negroes of Los Angeles, 2,000 crimes. So we will all be labeled as a group of people in crime.
I, between dodging bottles and bricks, walked around and talked to people, the people that I saw standing at the doors on the porch, and talked to them to find out how they felt. And two nights, I was there all night until about 8 o'clock in the morning. I talked to roughly about 1,200 people. I haven't talked to anybody yet, old or young, who didn't believe in what was going on out there. If there's only a small part of the community perhaps was throwing bricks, but this is not the point. The point is the trouble, the cause of the trouble, is what the people feel inside. And if the people in the house who stay in the house or out on the porch or the ones who are looking or taking no part in it believe in what they're doing out in the street, then you can't say that the community doesn't feel this way. And their response always was something like, the police have been beating us all the time. We've been taking it all the time, and tonight is our night. Everybody thought that there would be some kind of negotiation between the police department and the people who were rioting, people from the community. However, Chief Parker came out with a statement that he didn't want to talk to anybody. The second night I went out and started talking to people, this was what they were angry about. And their statements were, if Parker doesn't want to talk to us, we'll burn the whole damn town down. And the next time that we want to talk to him, we won't have to get on our knees to talk.
You start in Alhambra and go through Los Angeles and drive straight down Mission, you'll run through a Mexican neighborhood for 10 miles. And when you leave that Mexican neighborhood, you'll run into a colored neighborhood, and you'll stay in that colored neighborhood until you get out of the city of Los Angeles. You'll drive 20 miles, and that the white people have abdicated the central part of Los Angeles to Negroes and Mexicans. There are 1.5 million of them. And there is no race riot, because if there were a race riot, they would burn down the city of Los Angeles.
The Mexican-American, too, has a stake in this struggle for civil rights and individual recognition. The Mexican-American community has been subject to many of the same excesses that befall the Negro, with perhaps the further frustration and complication of language and cultural dissimilarities. If the loss of property and life of these last 5 days is to make sense, and the voice of the people crying out in obvious agony is to be heard above the din and understood, all of us must at this moment do all in our power to restore peace throughout our city and to discourage further violence. And then we must all...
There were other scenes in the trouble area. A police car was stolen. Sales of guns to white men were reported brisk in the wake of looting of guns from sporting goods stores and pawn shops yesterday. Looters at a supermarket put on clerk's aprons so they'd look as if they were working there. A large drugstore chain closed down. A spokesman said, "We've lost 7 stores.
I'm talking about Los Angeles, what happened with the police. I was in Los Angeles
about 2 o'clock last night, and which I was in Watts. And so I was just traveling, just going through there, in which the police, you understand, whooped me just like I stole something, which I ain't never been in no trouble. You know? That's a bad way, you understand, for a soldier to do a soldier. We were born in the United States of America, and we wasn't born in Europe, you understand, because we went over there and fit. That's why we don't have to go to the army now over the whole cross seas and over in Europe and fight, because we're fighting right here. I'm telling you, this is a veteran talking to you. William Franklin, cell number 3866927.
Wait a minute. Wait, let me tell you now. Hold it. Don't say a word. When you're going in the army, it's our country. When it come down to the nitty gritty, it ain't nobody's country but the white man. Look at Vietnam. We ain't got no right. Go there and fight. Who is the law for?
Why shoot me over there in Vietnam to fight? Somebody I don't even know, you understand? I come back in, I got to put the handcuffs
you
on.
You got to fight anyway, even if you come back
in. Tell me
here.
Why. You got to fight. I'm asking you a question.
They'll send a colored man over there, they take all of them off the street and send them to Vietnam. And when they come back here, go down south, they still have to fight to live. And that isn't right at all. If this is a white man world, let the white man fight the war.
Everywhere you
they
go,
come
you
back,
got to
they
fight.
Gotta fight. We don't have no way to...
It's the same thing that's happening all over the world. Everything that's happening in the world is race. Everything happening over the world is black versus white. That's where it is today, and it just took the Negro in America longer than everybody else to catch on, despite the fact that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's been trying to tell him that for 35 years, and then it took the black man in Los Angeles longer than all the rest of the black people in America longer to catch on. But when he caught on, I think you have to admit that he seemed to have caught on better.
I was so excited about Head Start, because I believe that's where we need to begin. I believe to save our children, to save our country, that's where we need to begin.
His children are going to grow up in this community. And your children, like I have a son 14, almost 15 years old. And maybe my son will meet your son in the street someday. And if my son doesn't have a good attitude, your son may be in trouble, and my son may be in trouble. So it's not enough to say, you know, well, that's the past, because we have to live for the future.
All I got to say is burn white, burn the mother.
You can't even get a job around here, not a decent job. All right, they hired my mother as a cook. She cooked for a white woman almost 15 years, but yet and still, she's not good enough to come through the front door, go to the back door, and this and that. Well, she had to do it because she had us to take care of.
If they treat us right, we'll treat them right.
That's right. I'd be willing to live next door, hand in hand with a white man.
If he treat my people,
that's right. If they treat us just like we supposed to be. We treat like we human and not dogs.
And that does it for this week's program. You've been listening to The Fire This Time, a Pacifica Radio documentary from 1965. We were only able to use portions of it, so if you would like to hear the entire documentary, 1 hour, from beginning to end, unedited, please call us in the archives at 1-800-735-0230 or visit us online at pacificaradioarchives.org. We want to thank the Grand Performances team, especially Leanne Hahn, for her vision to conceive of this event last year, and Anthony Marshall, co-founder of Lyricist Lounge, for helping pull a creative team together to present this material in an artistic environment, and the original Pacifica Radio KPFK producers of The Fire This Time, Trevor Thomas, who had the courage to bear witness to the events as they happened and broadcast them to the larger Los Angeles and national audiences. From the Vault is produced by Brian DeShazer and Mark Torres. I'm Brian DeShazer, your host. Thank you for listening and keeping our history alive.
The time is 6:59. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Hard Knock Radio is next. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Matt Dishman Community Center annual block party on Saturday, August 8th from noon to 4 p.m. This family-friendly event will include barbecue grub, live music and a DJ, activities for kids, family swim in the pool, local vendors, and more. Again, that's the Matt Dishman Community Center annual block party on Saturday, August 8th from noon to 4 p.m. at Matt Dishman Community Center, 77 Northeast Knott Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hi, this is John Shock, host of Religion for Life. We all remember Mr. Rogers, the peaceful guy with the sweater and the tennis shoes and Welcome to My Neighborhood. But he was countercultural and a fierce peacemaker. Author Michael G. Long has written Peaceful Neighbor, Discovering the Countercultural Mr. Rogers.
Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine?
1, 2, 3, 4.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.